Mara, please call the roll to determine a quorum.
Sarah Holmgren?
Here.
Jay Lister?
Here.
Cheryl File?
Here.
Katie Holmlin?
Here.
Meg Lister?
Here.
Kimley Lister?
Here. Hey!
Great.
Five board members and our new student representative. Welcome. All right, we'll stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Move on to the approval of February 9th, 2021's agenda. I'll make a motion to approve tonight's agenda.
Second.
Okay, motion's been made and seconded. Is there any changes? Or anybody want to pull anything out? Okay, hearing none. Mara, please call the roll.
Cheryl File?
Yes.
Meg Lister?
Yes.
Katie Holmlin?
Yes.
Jay Lister?
Yes.
Sarah Holmgren?
Yes.
Kinley Lister?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0 with our, I guess I should say 6. Mm-hmm. this is the first time we've had the full board physically present. That's wonderful. Okay, next we will move on to the student representative report. I'm excited about this. I'm always excited about a student
Sarah,
presentation.
Actually, we have a student presentation today, the NYO middle schoolers.
Right, I see that. Mr. Cabral will present his middle schoolers participating in the Native Youth Olympics intramural activity. And we'll see what they've been learning. So those that are listening, maybe Mr. Cabral, you could give us a little background for those that maybe aren't as familiar.
Well, Mara is getting some videos she'll put up there. We do have a couple NYO kids on there that were able to make it, so they're calling in.
Oh.
And I will just kind of put this out there for all of you. We got some toys.
Just don't ask us to do it.
Yeah. So we started Native Youth Olympics with our middle school kids, and I'll just put this on the picture. This is a kickball that we just got from Shish Marat, and it is made with seal fur. That's the official ball, but it came Friday, and we did our first qualification on Thursday. So we're like, all the kids saw it, and they're going, no, we wish we had it for Thursday. But we got it donated from Sea Alaska and Kyle Worrell, who does Team Juno up there. It's been awesome. This little stick here is for the stick pull that they are doing. How this one works is that one of the games, two people kind of tug at it. We're not doing this event this year due to COVID and the close contact with them. But basically what you would do is you smother it with Crisco and you would try to pull it away from another person to imitate pulling fish from a net. And that's how you would kind of get your grip and kind of stay strong with it. This one we are actually doing, we're going to mount it on one of our squat racks, and it is the wrist carry or the wrist hang. And this one right now, today was the first day they got to try it. It is way harder than we thought. So they can kind of talk to you about trying to do the wrist carry or the wrist hang this year, but I put this up there too. And then I will have Peter and Nolan kind of talk a little bit, but what we're going to show you is we've been going, I think, almost a month here right now. This was our qualification round on Thursday, which the sixth graders got to compete virtually. So basically what it entails is we videotape the kids. We submit the video with proof of what the measurement was. So the kids have to learn their measurements too. And I'll let the two boys that are on there talk about all the events that we are doing, and they can give you the historical background, and then you guys can ask them questions. But right now, this is Paige doing the Alaska High Kick. The Alaska High Kick was done in their huts or wherever they lived during the winter time to stay in shape. It is a very, very tough event to do. All of their results we submitted Friday night, and we're just waiting for them to compile the results. Every kid that participates gets a free beanie from Coquimbo Tribal Council. They've been amazing at providing so much information for our kids. And if they place first, second, or third, they're going up against every kid in the state of Alaska. Throughout the state, we're all competing virtually. If they place, they get a medal and a hoodie. So there's a tier involved. Yeah, we started with 17 kids. We're at about 15 that have still continued. Right now it's the sixth graders who are competing virtually, but 7th, 8th grade will be a little bit later. Our next event is February 18th, but this is Paige and both Washke brothers measuring, so they know how to run it all while we tried to run the, I tried to run the camera. Paige has 3 attempts at each height, and they go up in increments. So you can play. So we make, we get a measurement, make sure that the measurement goes to the bottom of the ball. I think she's at 36 inches, 3 feet. So the kids measure, we get the proof with the camera, then we back up a little bit, and then what Paige has to do is she's going to go up on one arm, hold her opposite foot, kick the ball with one foot, and land on the same foot that she kicked the ball with, and must maintain balance. So she cannot have any other part of her body touch the floor once she goes vertical. So she does her measurement like that. They all kind of have their own way of measuring. So she's up. She will kick the ball and then land on that one foot and maintain balance. So she got that one successfully. The next measurement, I believe she went to 40, and she got her 40 inch. So I think we're going to be able to see her 40 inch right here. 40 inch measurement. Kids are really good, and it's all measured to the quarter inch. As soon as we get the proof, then we just kind of back up. So every single kid that goes, we measure them to make sure we've got the correct lineup. Then we run away, and then Paige has 3 chances, 3 attempts to get the 40 inch, which is really high. It's tough. So you can see she's maintaining her balance on one foot. She gets down one and lands. She went to 44, but missed her 3 shots at 44. 44 is really high. But then it's
awesome.
It's super
awesome. You want to just tell them?
Yeah. Peter Nolan, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. I can hear you.
Awesome. Okay. Peter Nolan, you want to talk about the kneel jump and 1 foot, 2 foot high kick and all the details about it. You guys can choose. Or you can choose whatever you guys want to talk about.
And they can turn on their video.
You can turn your video on. So Peter and Nolan are 6th graders, and they are competing. The 2 foot high kick is coming up, but they can. Nolan, which one do you want to talk about?
I can talk about, I'll talk about the kicks. 2 foot,
okay,
1 foot.
You want to do 1 foot and 2 foot?
Sure. If Peter wants to do kneel jump, or if he wants to do the other one.
Kneel jump and then scissor bronze.
Okay.
Okay. Go get him.
You want me to start, or do you want him to start?
You can start.
Okay, so starting off with the 1 foot high kick. So both the 1 foot and the two foot were used for like signals, so when they would get back from a hunt, like a group of them would get back from a hunt, they would do the 1 foot or the 2 foot. So the 1 foot was if the hunt was successful, so if they got like a lot of seals or if they got like a whale, they would do the 1 foot high kick, and that would mean that the hunt was successful. If the hunt was not successful and they didn't get anything or they got minimal stuff, then they would do the 2 foot high kick to signal that.
And Nolan, when you do the 1 foot high kick, you want to explain how to do it?
Yeah, so pretty much what you do is you have the stand and you have to jump off with 2 feet. So you would jump off with 2 feet and hit it with one, and you can choose. You can hit it with one, jump off two, you hit it with one, and then you have to land on the same foot with only that foot. You can't land on two. You have to land on the same foot that you kicked it with. So that's what kind of makes it a little bit harder, just because you can't land. You have to kick it, and then you have to bring that same foot down and land on it.
So right now we have a kid hitting 64 inches on a 1 foot high kick, and the world record is 114 inches on a one leg high kick. So it's tough and explosive, but these kids are getting pretty good. And the 2 foot high kick, you want to say the 2 foot?
Yeah, so also the 2 foot is very similar to the 1 foot where so you have to jump on 2 feet as well, but this time you have to hit it with 2 feet instead of 1 foot. And then you don't have to land on a singular foot. You can land on both feet, but there's like a small difference, but it isn't that different. Besides, you have to hit it with two and land on two.
All right. Peter, we're going to show a video of the kneel jump real quick, and then you can talk about it. So we're going to show the video of Tyler, Paige, and Eli, and they are doing the kneel jump. Then you guys can just watch it, and Peter's going to explain how to do it.
Is it better with socks?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, you can do this one. A lot of them like to do this one barefoot.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's harder with socks.
I would imagine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Peter, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Awesome. Peter, you want to talk about the kneel jump?
So the kneel jump was used for I kind of forgot what it was used for.
Getting away from animals coming at you.
Yeah. And then,
yeah.
So for kneel jump, what you need to do is start off start on your knees, and you got to keep your feet flat. So you can't have your toes up. You have to keep them flat. So what you do is just like just jump and then go as far as you can or something like that.
And then you want to talk about scissor broad?
Yes. So the scissor broad jump was to balance on like ice that could break or that was like really thin or something like that. And it was also used to keep warm. And then how you do it is start up 2 feet, and then you jump 1 foot, and then the foot you didn't land on goes behind your other foot, and you land on that one, jump on 1 foot, and then land on 2 feet.
Perfect. It's very coordinated. You need to have some coordination to get it, and the kids do a great job of doing it. The kneel jump, the world record for female is 55 inches. Our furthest that we got was 23. So if you can imagine someone jumping 55 inches from that kneeling position, and then wow. The male is 65 inches. So they're going from that seated position 65 inches in front of them. And so it really tests them a lot. And did you guys try the wrist carry today?
I did not.
I did not either.
Yeah, it is tough. Basically, what they're doing is holding on to this stick and holding their entire body weight basically just on their wrist. And they have to basically, what it is hang there as long as they can, making their body into a ball as much as they could. In the real event, you would have two people on either side carrying them to kind of imitate bringing back their catch or whatever they hunted for. Mm-hmm. And so they would race around the gym to see how far they could get before the person fell off.
Oh my God.
So you're trying to find the person that can hang on the most, but it's only with their wrist. That's
wow.
It. And it was tough. I think the longest we got today was 2 seconds.
Oh my God.
But I think the world record is 188 feet for the wrist carry going around in circles. But their age, they're going to see how long they can hang.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions you got for them?
What's your favorite?
For my opinion, I would probably say 2 foot or 1 foot. They're kind of tied for me. They're both pretty fun, but I would say I've been doing kind of better at 2 foot than 1 foot recently. So that makes it a little bit more fun if I can do it good. And I'd also say that the Alaskan high kick is pretty fun. And yeah, I like the kicks, the high kicks.
Peter, do you have a preference or a favorite?
My favorite is probably 2 foot high kick or the scissors broad jump. They're both really fun and they're pretty challenging. I like doing stuff that's like really challenging and makes me try harder and like make me do my best. And yeah, they're both really fun.
So the 18th of February, they'll be competing virtually in the 2 foot and seal hop. And I think Nolan and Peter, you guys love the seal hop, don't you?
I actually do. I do like the seal hop.
I do not really like seal hop.
It's a hard one. Basically, what it is they're hopping on their hands and their toes, and their bottom can't come above their shoulders, so they have to keep basically a plank position hop.
Oh, geez.
As far as they can around the gym and back. The 7th, 8th graders have to go a little bit lower and on their knuckle, and then they do the seal hop on their knuckles. Then they got Nick Hansen last year doing it. He went down the gym and back about a halfway with a good 90 feet. We got a couple of kids hitting 60 feet right now.
Cool.
So it was pretty cool. But yeah.
That's awesome.
Good group of kids. Bigger part of
it. Any other questions? Thank you for sharing. That was pretty neat.
Thanks, boys.
No problem. Yeah, well, I will see you guys later.
Bye, Nolan.
Yeah, bye. Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks for having me. It was really fun.
Bye, buddy.
All right, see ya.
All right.
I think we can just be done now. That was perfect.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Cabral, for spearheading it, keeping our middle schoolers engaged and in activities despite our odd year. Okay, next we'll move on to student representative report. We want to welcome our new student representative, Kinley Lister, and she'll be serving on the board for the rest of the year.
Yay!
Okay. We'd love to hear your report if you've got something to report.
So we are currently in the third semester too. And as the semester switched, all students finished up with two classes that are normally a year long and began two more in addition to the year-round classes. And the Poetry Out Loud competition was held last week, and four finalists were selected. The recordings of these students will be sent into the regional competition. And several art students submitted works to the Tsunami Bowl T-shirt design competition, which is statewide, and the two winners were Maya Enriquez and Abby Anderson, who are both PHS students. The basketball season is underway, and they had games against Metlakatla last weekend. Pet Band has been practicing, but the EOC prevented them from performing at the previous games, which many students are upset about. And then this week, WAVE has been working with the school to raise awareness about teen dating violence, and students were asked to wear orange at school today.
And is orange, wearing orange is in for, is that the color that goes with violence? Okay.
Good.
Well, Poetry Out Loud, when are the finals? When do they get, do you know when that is? We might hear from Mr. Cabral if you don't.
I think they're going to be sent to the regional level next week.
Okay.
And that's all virtual.
Okay. Great. Anybody else? Questions? Thank you and welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
Wonderful to have someone. All right, we'll move on. Any correspondence?
You received the letter up there, Sarah, from ETP
Oh, sorry.
This? Mm-hmm. Is that what this is?
Mm-hmm.
Captain Carter, yep. The card? Oh.
Sarah, Kate, Cheryl, Meg, and Jay, in recognition of School Board Appreciation Month, we would like to thank you for your time, dedication, and efforts in support of Petersburg Schools, the students, and the staff. Thank you for all you do. Sincerely, the Associated Teachers of Petersburg, Joanne Day, co-president. So that's very nice. And thank you for your shout out today on the.
You're very welcome. A little candy here tonight, too.
Thank you. All right. Any comments from audience unrelated to the agenda items? Okay. Comments from the audience related to agenda items? Or anybody online?
There's no one online.
Okay. Comments from board members?
I don't know if it needs to be later on, but the extra duties, like for elementary, or not elementary, but middle school, the yearbook. I don't know if late to. Have we ever thought about making it a class, like an elective? Or would that cause scheduling difficulties?
It'd be hard to get because it's three different grades. It would be hard to get them all connected. The high school has had a class. They're not a class now. But the middle school has never had a class. It's always been F school club. They've had a paper that was kind of part of the class. But
okay. I was just wondering.
That's a great idea. That's a good question.
All right. Any other comments from board members? Okay, we'll move on to the consent agenda. I'll make a motion to approve the February 9th, 2001 consent agenda. Got a second?
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Any discussion? Okay. Those include our accounting reports and payroll bills, as well as our regular board meeting minutes from January 12th and our personnel action report, which is just any new hires or resignations. Mara, please call the roll.
Jay Lister?
Yes.
Meg Lister?
Yes.
Katie Holman?
Yes.
Cheryl File?
Yes.
Kinley Lister?
Yes.
Sarah Holmgren?
Yes. Okay, motion passes 5-0. Administrative reports. Moving right along, we'll start off with superintendent reports. Superintendent Clint Painter.
Okay, thank you. So we are, just as always, we always like to recognize the efforts of our students and staff and community in keeping us in the green and keeping our kids in school and doing our activities and just moving forward. So it's always good to recognize all those efforts. I know it takes a lot of energy and planning on a lot of people's part. So just always like to recognize that. We have had some great professional development in January. We were able to have 26, I believe, of our teachers were participated in the virtual conference for RTI, response to intervention and multi-tier systems of support. And it's really just an effective instruction conference, and it was over the weekend, so people did give up 2 days, and one of those days was a beautiful sunny day. So lots of learning, great. They had a DJ on there that virtually, it was really a fun, it gave us some really good ideas, actually, for other conferences and things that you can do virtually. So anyway, lots of great learning, great connections. I think it was the highest percentage of people they had ever participate in a conference like that. So it was great. We'd never be able to send 26 people, mm-hmm. you know, in person. So lots of great feedback there. So we were able to use some of our federal dollars pay for just the registration. We also have the Alaska Society for Technology and Education, the ASTE conference is coming up, and that's happening this weekend. We have about, I think, 11 participants. One teachers will be participating in that, and that's also virtual over the weekend, and then some afternoons on Monday and Tuesday of next week. So looking forward to that. We are tentatively dipping our toe into the budget process to move forward and start planning and thinking about staffing and schedules. A lot of unknowns there. Sarah and I talked about a little bit on the campus connection today, but this is a year like no other, as we know, and so it's going to be challenging. It's always challenging this time of year anyway to start in this process, because we're always making assumptions about budgets based on some things that we don't know, namely really enrollment and just other things like that. So this year in particular will be even more challenging. So we will be putting out an enrollment survey, trying to get an idea from families, you know, people maybe who made decisions this year to do some different things, whether it's homeschool or, you know, all those different options that people had that we totally get. just to see if people are what they're thinking for next year. And then that will help us kind of determine class sizes and needs. So we're working through that. Lots of good work going on with schedules and good feedback there, secondary world, and then just thinking about class sizes and such and makeup of classes in the elementary as well. Cautiously optimistic. We are working through some negotiations with the Associated Teachers of Petersburg, and that is Cheryl File and Sarah Holmgren and myself and Karen Morrison. And we've had a couple of sessions, a couple meetings, and we'll be moving forward with that throughout February. Good relationship with our local organization. So calendar's coming up, some work on that, feedback from parents and community, some feedback from ASB students and students in general and staff. So that's coming up later, but that's been quite a bit of work, and we shared some of those comments and survey results with you guys too, so you could see those. That was something you were interested in seeing. So give you guys those. We have some information there too, that, and I think both Rick and Heather have some information about just some of the comments around spring break and travel and all those kinds of things. So just to give some perspective about kind of numbers of what people do in Petersburg and different decisions people make and travel. So they'll give you some information there. And then I have some from past years that I'll share a little later when we're talking about that. We are continuing to work with the medical center on offering bi-monthly asymptomatic testing. So we always want to give them a shout out for their work, making that pretty simple for us to do. And Mara helps us keep track of people that are interested through a survey. And it's very, very efficient process. So they come up and do it on a Friday morning every other week. They do it right outside the school, and we really appreciate that. Those efforts, and we do have a number of staff members who have also signed up and have been able to receive the vaccination, people who were interested in doing that. So had a couple clinics here, and we've had quite a few people interested in doing that. So again, shout out to PMC and their work with Search on that. Quick kudos here. I'm sure it'll come up during reports, but just to recognize the efforts of Mr. Cabral for the basketball extravaganza this weekend. That was a huge effort, a huge undertaking. Metlakatla, that was their first activity they've allowed their students to participate in, so we kind of felt like new parents, and we didn't wanted it to go well, and you know, just wanted everything to go the way that it should go, and also still have a good time. So we accomplished all that stuff, so thank you, Mr. Cabral, for all the efforts there as well. And I think that's about it for me. Okay. Yeah.
Any questions? No? Okay. We'll move on to elementary principal's report. Principal Kahn.
Can you guys hear me from there?
Probably okay. A question for Mara, maybe.
So just a few things that have happened. Swim and PE are there. Every child gets 4 sessions of swim a month and 4 sessions of PE a month. It's just the way it worked out. We couldn't figure out how to get 17 classes in every day to swim and PE. So that was the tackling point right there. So they're up and running. They're having fun. I was just in PE today at the end of the day, and she was brave. First graders with hockey today. We did have a lot of people attend the RDI conference. Thank you. It was great. It was the most attendance ever in our state for RDI conference, the way that they held it. And then, of course, lots of snow. And Stephanie Powick had this idea after the RTI, during the RDI conference, we were thinking like outside blocks. She's like, we need sled. And so we haven't seen sleds at the elementary school since I've been there. And then Ralph was kind enough to make a little sledding hill for our little guys. And it's just like this little bump on the hill, but they have the best time at that sledding hill. They have a great time. So thank you to Ralph. And I think Eric has been out there. We've managed to wipe out a couple sleds already.
A few.
But looking if anybody has sleds, they only had smaller sleds for kinder, first, and second grade. It's
pushing in on third grade, so there wasn't any sleds available to purchase for fourth or fifth grade in Petersburg. But I go down there every week, hoping that there's going to be more sleds that come in at some point. Their shipment arrives on Monday and Tuesday. So I am the Wednesday shopper. Fourth grade went out to a field trip to learn a little bit about survival skills. And so they were doing shelters, they did building, fire building, and of course they put in good sledding. So they were out at 40,000, and they all had a blast out there. Just looking at this, just letting you know that the Alaska Reeds Act is coming back, and it's here. I don't know where it will go, but it is here, and it's coming back. And for those of you that don't know, it's just every child reading by third grade. And there's parent components in there. There's school components and progress monitoring every 2 weeks and retention. And it's the whole shebang. We've been talking a lot about that even if this bill does not pass, what are the ideas behind this? And is everybody reading at third grade in our school? And how can we do things a little bit differently to get those interventions in daily? So those are just some of the conversations that we've been having at the elementary school. Currently, our enrollment is staying the same. After spring break, we'll only have one virtual kid. So we have two right now, but one virtual kiddo will remain, and then we have everybody there. The current programs being offered at the elementary school, after school recess, homework busters, student council, Girls on the Run is coming back and will be starting. And all those clubs are offered with an after-school snack as well. Our SED numbers are continuing to climb. Right now, we kind of are staying still just because our itinerant isn't here yet. And so as soon as the itinerant is here, we have people that are on the referral list, and we should be able to get those people seen and observed, and our numbers will increase at that time. Just looking ahead and what's coming up, we have Mr. Sullivan's class is going skiing. They were skiing down the hallways today. They put on their boots and put on the skis, and they did a trial run right down the hallway a couple times. They're back in again. So tomorrow they're going outside for the first time, some of these guys, for the first time outside in the backyard, and they're going to learn how to just kind of ski on stable ground. And a big thank you to Mandy Wood for helping with this idea and for coming in and making that happen. So Valentine's Day parties are happening on Thursday. There's no school on Friday. And the big 100th day of school is coming next week. That's a pretty exciting time. We're also gearing up next week and the week after for the mass growth and fluency testing. We have conferences coming up on the 3rd and 4th. They're going from 3 to 7. We're looking at an artist in residence, Lisa Ceramic, and thank you to Joni Johnson for helping with that grant. The Partners in Education has also, they're putting in money to match some of the referral resources. We have a migrant Title I pizza party happening on February 19th for Title I, and then February 26th for migrants with the Coast Guard present. Sign up for Christina for that event. We're looking forward to the enrollment survey coming out and then gathering that information and contacting the families that we know of in Petersburg to see if they have changed their mind and where we go from there for as far as planning for next year's numbers. And then, as I said before, Girls on the Run is starting March 22nd, right after spring break. And I'll save the rest for the other agenda items.
Okay. Any questions on that? Oh, okay, thank you. Con? Next, we have the middle school, high school principal's report. Principal, Mr. Garland.
All right. Hi, good evening. You can hear me okay if I talk loud?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all right.
All right, well, exciting time right now as we're talking scheduling. You may have heard that from the kids, which is a big deal, especially because we've done such a huge changes here with COVID, and then we obviously are optimistic for what it looks like next year, so we're planning back for some options there. We've been doing scheduling planning meetings as a staff. We've reached out a little bit with class advisories and asked for students' input. The student government, of course, has been asked several times just to give feedback. Just what do you like, what don't you like? And kids are pretty quiet, but we've heard, you all received a letter with some ideas from, with what parents think that they're hearing from kids, and we've been hearing that a little bit. And, of course, there are lots of different things, just like calendars. But we're looking at a couple good ideas right now. The big ones are going back to a 7-period day in the high school and the middle school, but using that first period in the high school as an elective-only type so that it gives a good chance for kids that want to take band to get into band, but also do some fun things like shop and art, and then go to a 7th, then have 6 periods after that. And we're hearing a lot of people say they like students where a couple students where you pull the class meetings. The idea of 2 blocks, so that that's an alternating class, and we've had that traditionally, and that keeps the number of classes per day down a fair bit, as well as gives some of those classes kind of longer sections to work with kids. So that's one of the popular schedules out there. And another one was the idea of going to a 6-period day and then ending a little early and having that common plan that we had this year. Some teachers really like that. Some students like that. So that's another kind of popular option. Both options have a shorter Friday. So that's kind of what we're looking at. Of course, we want to get back up to get some minutes back in there. We want to make sure, our schedules are really tightly aligned. We want to maximize options for students for electives and still having time to record. So there's a lot of, a balancing act, which is why we get a lot of input. We have another meeting this Thursday with teachers. We'll be talking about it and moving forward. But some good stuff out there. We started with lots of different options out there, and we're kind of winnowing down, which is a good experience. As Kinley told you, this week we are recognizing in our secondary schools just the Teen Dating Violence Awareness Week. What a great partnership with WAVE. I was on a call with them, with Ms. Turner, our counselor, and talking through them, and they came on as a big virtual kind of webinar to all the high school classes today. We recognize just the awareness today, and so it was Wear Orange. WAVE got a bunch of orange masks, disposable masks, so the kids could wear orange at staff, and they said, well, my orange tie today, and a lot of staff. We got a picture there, and we'll get that out on Facebook pretty soon of the kids. So that's a neat thing. It was really actually a really nice message. It was neat. In the meeting I was with Kinley with student government today, they expressed how they enjoyed the message from WAVE. So it's fun to get them out there, and Ms. Turner leading that charge. And then Thursday in McCoff Middle School, there'll be a presentation just in the 8th grade, but the whole school, will also be encouraged to wear orange just to recognize this issue and be aware of it. So that's the thing. And again, thanks to WAVE and Ms. Turner. Again, Kinley and I had some, and we talked about it too, but this cool stuff going on, Poetry Out Loud. That was really fun and, in a different climate, but it's always been, always would send off virtual. And then you would send, so everything can be done virtually now, which is cool. So on the stage, Mrs. Lenhart, Mrs. Cotta organized, but you still have the English Language Arts Department with Mr. Shumway, Mr. Ward, Mrs. Evans as a judge, and so a lot of people involved. And watching these kids just go up on stage, kind of in a spotlight and recite poetry, it's always a really cool experience. So thanks for that, and she's exactly right. They did a second video today of the finalists to send them off just because to get our lighting a little bit better for that video. So yeah, those will go off to the state to see region, and then we're hopefully getting someone up at the region and state level. So that's going on now. Speaking of being on stage, the spelling bee is going on, and we're getting ready for that. So word lists are out for middle school kids. Families ask your kids if they have those lists. You can get more at the office. Classroom finals, February 17th in the middle school. So they'll start figuring out our finalists for each grade, and then school and district finals will be on March 4th. For those finals there, there'll be video streams, no audience again. Sorry about that, but you'll be able to watch your kids compete in spelling bee, so that'll be really fun on stage. And it'll be the middle school's going to do it, and the elementary will come over and do it at a different time. And then, as usual, we'll have our champion from each school duke it off and figure out who the district champ is. So, yay, spelling bee. We are doing math testing coming up pretty soon in the high school. That'll be next week, only freshmen, and we're only doing math and reading at the language test because of the strange year. And then Makeup Middle School the week after, the week of the 22nd, will do their math test. And they'll do a pretty traditional Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, all 3 tests. It's coming up if hear what your kids are doing at school, that's happening. I also was able to attend the RTI conference. Thank you. Pretty cool to have that many people on there. It was pretty interesting. Almost 900, I think, across the state.
It was a lot.
But some good presenters. It was really neat. If you haven't heard this, they actually had a virtual DJ. Was it Wade? I thought he was really good. I mean, it was really interesting to have a virtual DJ kind of have race and have this guy, you know, spinning records, he used that term, but it was pretty cool. Really well done to the state, and thank you just for the time. And there is a cost the district picked it up for many staff members here in Petersburg to attend, which is really neat. You've probably heard this before, I'm part of the ASL, the Alaska State Leadership Academy. This is my third year mentoring newer principals across the state. And I have two mentors right now, one here in Region 5, and I actually have one up north who told me they didn't have kids school last week because it got to negative 72 with the wind chill.
Oh,
I've never even heard of negative. That sounds so awful.
It does.
Ugh. So I know it's cold here, but it's not as cold as it could be in Alaska. But what a cool thing is we had a little breakout session one of the days. We worked with one of the presenters who's an author and everything, and he gave us some really great materials for hiring. And his session was, you know, a lot about hiring principals, kind of was based on, because he's kind of a leader of leaders. But we actually set today a good team with Heather and Ms. Whitstock, and Ms. KP came over. Thank you, Mara's been doing a lot of work. We've been able to kind of improve our hiring processes, which is really neat, some of the rating scales that we use. We found some pretty cool questions. It was really fun. So improving as we're looking, I think you're probably aware we have a couple sped positions, and so we're prepping for that. So that's pretty cool. Really appreciate that. It's always great just to find great stuff and make it your own, you know, instead of reinventing the wheel all the time. So. I also want to echo what the superintendent said. Whole basketball went really smoothly. I know Mr. Ball will be the first to say he did not do all the work, but he sure coordinated it and did, really an impressive job. There are so many pieces. It's not just, you know, streaming. It was honestly, there's so many fewer people, and it's got to be, what, three times as harder, Mr. Cabral? I mean, just all the little tiny
stand-ups. Ten.
Yeah. I mean, there's no concessions. The Pepe not to hit the field seems like it just took so many volunteers and really smooth. So. Thank you for that. But again, a ton of people, volunteers coming out and doing that. And I wanted to point out also, Ralph over here on my left, he's working on the mat room. It's almost ready. And hopefully then next time, I know Kelly said kids were disappointed. We were too. I'm a Pep Band parent. I love it. AP is, and love it. So hopefully next time we have a home game, we're going to have them play up in the mat room. But I know Ralph's been working really hard. I admit I put a couple hours in over the last couple nights. Do some caulking, which is kind of fun. That's what I can do.
A good job.
Luke helped a little. We understand a little bit from what Luke did, but appreciate that. So we're trying to get that ready because we do love our Pep Band, and I think it, you know, really supports the whole atmosphere. And to be honest, the spectators were really great. So thank you to the families for kind of working with us. We knew it felt weird, but Metlakatla was excited just to play. Obviously, we just felt really good, I think, for kids in the community to do something like that and still keep it safe for kids. So all that. All right, and we are back now that the semester started, giving you a little bit of grade data. I know you saw it in the packet. Reading it seems a little odd if you're having a hard time following along, but we did finish semester one, and of course our teachers worked really hard. We had 19 D's and F's for 16 students, which is the lowest we have at a grade check, and obviously kids are amping up, but teachers, you know, really putting in extra time, kids staying late just to make sure everybody does the best they can, because these are the solid grades that go in your transcripts in high school that live forever, you know. So really want to do a good job. So that's great to see low numbers. Talking about those block classes, 2 D pluses in a block class, no other D's or F's in a block class, and that is not counting VHS or independent study, which are kind of do at your own pace. So we did have a couple of those. 7 D's or F's in math classes in a non-block, and then 1 D plus in a block math class. That was the semester break, which is on January 22nd. So give me a little data there. And then we ran a grade check a week ago Monday, and a little higher here, but again, it's a grade check, 39 D's and F's for 30 students. 72% of the D's and F's are in block classes. So we're up again. It hit a lot of kids pretty hard. Half of the DNF students were ninth graders. It's interesting, and you've probably heard some of the studies that say freshman year is one of the just most challenging but also important class. So we'll get them back on track. It just starts off hard. Only one F, though, no D's in block math classes. So math's going pretty well. And 4 D's and F's in non-block math class. So giving you a little update on some of the grade check data. I know we want to stay on top of that. And then that big question, what's going well? Obviously, we're so thankful to be in green, have in-person school. Activities are happening, and that was a big thing, I think, that really really perked us up a little bit, especially in February. We're having a lot of multiple student support conversations with families. I thought that was interesting. Last couple weeks, Ms. Turner and I, or Ms. Cabral and I, or teachers, have been a lot of conversations about parents just supporting their students academically, which is that's fantastic. We love when people come forward and say, help, you know, especially with a different schedule and different climate or some kids are home. So that was interesting to see a, I don't call it a spike, just a rise in that. Fewer students are at home. We've had a few more kids come back in person to school there at the semester break, which is cool. And then what challenges are we facing right now? Activity travel modifications for safe and successful home events, including pep band. Like I said, Ms. Cabral's working hard, and now we're trying to travel. I mean, we're going to go to Craig, and now we're not, or Craig was going to come, and going to Kauai. It's just everything is so complicated, you know, keep people safe. So that's certainly a challenge we're facing. Like I say, we, Ms. Cabral, maybe not more than I am, but lots of conversations. Extensive absences, you know, and that's something we'll talk about in calendars here pretty soon. There's, you know, a lot of people gone with sickness. We just had a family go south for some medical. We obviously just trips and all that kind of stuff has been, it's hard to manage. Students not engaging or sometimes staying home online. We're still dealing with that. We're kind of making games, but kids will just kind of, I'm not coming in today, and then they're back tomorrow. And teachers are, you know, we're planning for you to be in when you can be in. So we're just working on that. And then planning for next year is because we don't know. I mean, we're going to have to mask. We have to distance. It's going to be, we just don't know what it's going to look like, and obviously we want to plan well ahead. So that's a real challenge. It's something we're talking a lot about, and again, we have a great and experienced staff that are helping out. And then even the fun stuff, planning for prom, you know, can we do an outdoor prom? A virtual prom would be easy, but would kids participate? You know, it will not be a traditional prom unless some sort of miraculous viral cleansing happens, you know, or it will not be a traditional prom. But we certainly want, I love it when the kids dress up, go, you know, it's so fun. What can we do? There's lots of conversations started.
I'm going to use that.
Viral cleansing.
That's a new thing. And then graduation courses. It's not far off.
You just coined a new
phrase.
Yeah,
you did. I'm going to start using it.
Viral cleansing.
I
want
to
be done with it. I
want
to.
We do, too. Any questions or comments from Mr. Dahmer? Nope. Okay. Thank you. All right. Mr. Cabral, you're on deck. I guess you're up to bat now. You weren't on deck.
Hopefully that 300. Mr. Intramurals, moving along. We just did a meeting with our middle school basketball coaches. We are going to attempt to begin middle school basketball. We did a mitigation plan for that. And
it's exciting.
Everything that we do has to have a plan, which is fantastic, super amazing, and it's always updating. So you never know what's going to be on that list for the next week. We are going to attempt to do middle school basketball. Our kids will be masked because what's going to be happening is we're going to be actually breaking their paws just a little bit for about 14 minutes within our little mitigation plan. So they will be masked. We're going to have a meeting here soon, get some information out, making sure all their physicals are up to date, getting the COVID-19 waivers. All our coaches are going to finish up their certification. Coach Matt Pollock and Coach Nathan Lopez, which are already our coaches here, and they're already certified. So that is awesome that we're going to attempt to do that. And they'll be doing it in the Parks and Rec gym, so our kids can get used to the screening process. But they already know how to screen. It's just going to be working together and seeing how many numbers we get. A lot of the things that we do have a maximum number. I'll get down to that in a little bit about what our numbers look like. And everything else. But we're moving along. Our next event, February 18th, for NYOs is the 2 foot and seal hop. And then March 4th will be the last week for the sixth graders who will be doing 1 foot high kick, the wrist carry, if anybody now wants to attend it after training today, and then the scissor broad jump, which is really, really fun. Esports has begun. Our highest number of esports participants we've ever had right now. We also have a team for League of Legends, a team for Rocket League, and a team for Madden 21. So it is going wonderful.
That's high school.
That group has started practice already. And they'll begin February 16th is their first matchup, and they'll go all the way through April with our high school esports team. So we did not have a season in the fall, and that got canceled. But then we're going to start in the spring. And we will go with those teams. Basketball has begun, in a way. And so it is very modified as the kids are getting used to it and the coaches are as well. We go week to week, day by day, minute by minute. Anything can change. Just found out today, Craig Girls Varsity will not be coming this weekend. They had some injuries this past week, which drops their numbers. So we're going to be doing as many things as we can. Both our JV boys and varsity girls will be heading to Kauai instead on Fridays. And then the JV boys from Craig are coming over here because there's a change in color in the community that they were going to, so they are not going now. Things change day by day. That's kind of what we did throughout the whole fall, where Thursday we're on, Friday morning we're not. And so it changes quite a bit. Just to give you guys a number of like how this weekend worked for us, we had ended up with three sessions. We're very fortunate that LaCala came across. They have been very, very serious about this whole COVID situation, especially with the older population in MET. This is their first event they were ever able to do. So they were very happy to get here. Just the countless hours that had to go to prep before they get here. You can't count all the hours and meetings between everything that has gone on. But we have a maximum total of 85 in our gymnasium. That's our number that we feel comfortable with, that we can separate everyone within the gym. So each kid that is participating in that game gets two tickets. So you add the players from both teams, you add the extra players that they brought because they traveled with 27, the referees, the administrators, the cleaners, the table workers. With the highest we got was 81 this past weekend. We had people not show up with tickets. So 85 is kind of our magical number that we can space out. So if you were able to see anything in our gym, our 24 spectators 6 feet apart and Metlakatla 20 feet away from them, just to stay as safe as possible for their community, because it's very, very big for their community to even get off of an island. It was huge, very, very huge. So Pep Band, we're looking to put up in the mat room. They are in a different air handling system than our main gymnasium. That is one of the big pieces. Some schools do not have anybody in the stands. They have zero fans for the whole entire year. A lot of regions within our state have shut everything down just because of their healthcare system. So we are fortunate to be looking at that. Our mat room is going to be awesome, different, but we still get to have some people in there, which would be great. And so Matt and Mr. Dormer, Mr. Dormer and Ralph have been doing it quite a bit. If you've not seen the mat room yet, you should. It's a beautiful job that they've done there. Over break with Tyler. But thank you to all the people that helped out for this weekend. If you can imagine trying to kick everybody out of the gym, sanitize with your Ghostbuster backpack that's over there. That thing is awesome. And then get your next 24 fans in and screened and temperature checks and questions. It took a lot of people, a lot of planning. Probably lost about 10 pounds. So it was great. And then we are looking and discussing throughout the region about antigen testing. That is one thing that we're kind of looking at. We've been on a couple EOC meetings, Rick, Eric, and I. Just antigen testing our high-risk students, which are the ones that are traveling. Some communities right now are looking at, before we even go there for a game or something like that, they may require a test before we even show up, just to keep their community safe. So we're trying to get many of those games as we can in safely. Some school districts are doing different things. They've got lower numbers because their gym is not as big. And some have higher numbers because their gym is much larger than ours. So that's a lot of the things that we look at every single time the mitigation plan comes up. Some communities have a different threshold of active cases that can happen. So in order for Metlakatla to get here, if they had to touch the community of Ketchikan, Ketchikan has to be at a specific number. They touch Ketchikan and they're at a number, it's a 10-day quarantine and those kids are not in school. So try to keep the academic process at first and foremost, but yet keeping kids active within our parameters. So looking at antigen testing to see what that would look like for our high-risk students that are traveling quite a bit throughout the communities, just so we can keep academics rolling as much as possible. Outdoor activities are looking great for the spring. We're looking at wrestling still in March. Our state Athletic Association will have another meeting coming up here in 2 weeks. Our region has a big meeting next week to talk about the rest of spring and what that looks like. Some of the things that are happening with our outdoor activities, specifically track and field, we probably will eliminate the relay events, anything that has a baton. That's one thing that may change. That way we minimize as much contact as possible. If you look at basketball, there is no jump ball anymore to start a game off with. That has been eliminated. The ball is automatically given to the visiting team. So a lot of things just to try and mitigate as much of unnecessary touching movement as possible with all of those. So baseball, track and field looking decent for the spring, especially because they're outdoor activity. The hardest part is finding out how we will travel. So their numbers are high. Track and field, there's only two locations in the track and field, a legitimate one. So if those numbers stay high, we're not sure what that will look like. Go week by week, day by day, minute by minute. And state events is all based upon specifics and specifically the host community that will host the state event. Anchorage is kind of the hot spot for hosting these events, depending on how many, what their numbers look like, depending on whether or not that school will host, whether or not fans will be allowed at state. May not happen, may happen, who knows. So there's specific criteria that needs to be met before a state event will take place. For example, basketball, there needs to be a minimum of two teams, and both of those teams have to be from different regions. So if there's three regions for 2A in the state of Alaska, if Region 5 doesn't go and Region 4 doesn't go, state event will not happen because then you have the same teams coming from one conference. So basically, you play the same team, you just play the same team along with each other. A lot of different criteria that needs to be met in those things when it comes to the changes. Unfortunately, I've gotten used to changing.
Everybody else. All have.
Question. Yes.
Do we have a coach for track yet?
No, not yet. We have some ideas, though. We have some ideas.
I will make one comment. I'm just trying to wrap my brain around a baton. Passing for track being any different than passing the basketball.
Exactly. Your thoughts exactly. Yep.
I'm just like, really?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. I just don't understand, because it's the same team.
Yeah.
You're not passing it to the other team.
Yeah. We had that discussion, too, about jump ball, because typically it's your two tallest people who are jumping the ball. Everyone else is pretty good 6 feet apart. And
all right.
The ball could play, they're probably guarding each other. Those two same people.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think they tried to find, the Federation tried to find as many.
I can see where you would take out certain things. Just, that's, okay.
Yeah.
Don't do a jump ball. Whatever.
Volleyball,
the baton thing seems a little overkill.
Every time. Yeah.
If they're accepting basketball, it seems like a baton pass on the same team would be.
When you're outside.
Just outside.
Yeah.
Hand sanitizer, go wash your hands when you're done with your relay.
Yeah. Very interesting.
They're fun meetings.
Oh,
I bet. Lots of rabbit holes.
Yeah. But big thanks to all the people this weekend. If you can imagine what happens in between in about 15 minutes to get 24 people, actually 24 plus another 48 people out of the gym, sanitize every single chair, the entire bleacher, screen everyone to get them back in to collect tickets and then make sure that they're all masked the entire
day. Wow.
Couple
we did see you.
We're there to make sure you spread your chairs out and your benches. We're fortunate enough to that we can make 6 feet with our benches. Some schools don't have that luxury.
Mm-hmm.
But if you watch Wrangell games, our kids automatically start to move their chairs, space them out on purpose. So our kids are doing as much as they can to keep as many things going as possible.
I think Ralph has show and tell for you. I think.
Yeah.
I think you want to show him. Do you want to do your show and tell?
I can.
Yeah.
So,
thank you, Mr. Cabral.
So last board meeting, we discussed the super generator that the borough bought us. So this is the...
Not vinegar.
This is not vinegar. So it is made with vinegar. So it's vinegar, salt, and electricity, and tap water. So what we do is we take this. It comes out of the machine at about 2,200 parts per million. And then... through trial and error, which was me with a bunch of kitchen pitchers trying to figure out what the dilution is to get it to 650 to 800 parts per million. So it came up with 103 ounces per gallon of water to 25 ounces of solution. And you can smell it. It smells like a pool that's like a mile away. So it's super, super mild smelling. Totally natural. I even went to the extreme of buying organic vinegar. So, and then, if you're interested, this little strip here is how I test it.
Mm-hmm.
So every batch gets tested with the PPMs, and it gets measured up against the color scale on the PPM gauge.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that this is 750 PPMs. And then we take it, put it in the hydrostatic sprayer, which we have two backpack sprayers, and we have three pistol sprayers. All of the batteries just got recalled yesterday, except for two.
Oh,
so,
no.
But, so this is set up, I think it's 140 micron or something like that. But you turn it on, and you spray it, and you just fog the area. And it's completely safe, natural, and it's good for the environment, and it kills COVID.
Woohoo!
We love that.
And we're transitioning to this throughout the school. So, we're getting away from the tablet. So it's basically the same product as the tablet. It's a little bit safer to use because you don't have to touch the concentrated tablet, put it in the bottle. So the teachers get it either in the 1 gallon jug where I'm waiting on arrival of some 5 gallon jugs to be placed throughout the school district. And teachers can just take their spray bottles, fill it up, and they're able to clean the classroom.
Yeah. So even post-COVID, this will be after our viral cleansing.
This is part of the viral
cleansing. It will still be usable for us.
Yes. Yes.
I would imagine for the regular cold and
it should help with any
it's good.
Any
creepy crawly
pathogen that gets passed from people to people. And to make this gallon of solution here was about 14 cents.
Whoa.
So.
Nice. How much do you go through in a week?
Since we're not fully widespread yet, I can make 20 gallons of concentrate a day, which makes 100 gallons of solution. So we offer it up to the borough, PMC, anybody who wants to try it, can get it.
Yep.
But it's been online for about a week now, and I've gone through 5 gallons of the solution, not the concentrate.
Went through a gallon in about 16.
Yeah.
What's the contact time to kill the virus?
1 minute.
1 minute,
okay. Wow, that's quick.
You want some, Jay?
Figure
off. I'm thinking the police department needs it.
It's good. Research. This was actually developed for use in hospitals, dental clinics, and major food service places. So, it's a pretty good thing.
We make lots of it.
Thank you.
If you want to see the machine, when it's not 7 degrees outside, we can walk over to the elementary school boiler room.
Another time.
Yeah.
When it's a little warmer.
Cool.
Great. Thank you, Ralph. Okay. We'll move on. We don't have a formal report, so we'll move on to committee reports. Crisis, Cheryl. Probably haven't met. Curriculum, Katie? Facilities, Jay? Legislative liaison. We're still highly dependent upon our administrative assistant. Keep us up to speed, since that was her definite forte.
The House still hasn't organized. The Senate has organized. There's committee meetings going on, but no real action can take place until the House organizes.
Mm-hmm. Negotiations, Cheryl and I are, as we said earlier, working with on a team with Erica and Karen, and we have already met twice with the teachers union, and so far so good. We're just kind of starting the beginning. So we have not the eternal set the date for the policy meeting. I don't know if I can do any more meetings. I really don't think I can. So might have to wait another month or two. Technology, probably. Nope. Wellness. And we already have negotiations down below. Okay. Or we talked about it already. Okay, special recognition. We kind of talked about that earlier. School Board Appreciation Month. Thank you for the goodies.
You are very welcome. We do want to acknowledge all of your efforts, and I did.
And I'm just gonna need some cards that Miss Mitchell's class had made as well.
Oh, up here, right here.
There's some nice.
Oh, fun. You can go.
Yeah. So we do want to recognize and acknowledge all the work of our fabulous school board. We truly appreciate your dedication, commitment, your positive attitudes. We know you don't make enough money, so here's some candy and heartfelt cards. So we do appreciate you.
And especially for you, Jen.
Oh!
Thank you.
Okay, we'll move on to old business. 15.1, the Pierceburg School District COVID return to school policy. We continue to leave that on the board agenda each month. Hopefully we won't have to talk about it next year, but next school year. But as of now, I think we'll keep bringing it up just to make sure we need to make any adjustments to it. Does anybody have any comments or suggestions or changes that they wanted to bring up or consider?
I have a question about it, I guess. With some people now having both doses of the vaccine, does that change their re-entry plan, if you will?
The recommendations that we are getting from our local medical advisors and DHSS is there's no changes at this point.
They can still spread it.
That's what they're, yes. Okay. And they don't know to what degree at this point. So, yes.
Okay.
So at this point, they're not
until
recommending
that changes.
Any changes. Yeah.
Oh, I had another question too, actually. Because maybe I just read it a different way. I had a parent ask me today. It was their understanding that only the parents have to test and not the children returning to school. Clarification on that one.
Well,
again, I think I read it a very.
There's an
age threshold for the
birth. I think, yeah, I think there's a 10, is it 10 and under or under 10?
You don't have to.
I think that that they said they could act under the parents' test. Most parents have opted to just go ahead and do it because if they're coming in on the plane, you just do it and, you know, then you just know, you know, that kind of thing. But that is the way it's written.
I guess I had one question. Do we probably need to have a strategy to start pairing some of this stuff back? Like, once everybody's vaccinated, wants to be vaccinated in town, do we start eliminating some of these restrictions? Or we got a smart start, we need a smart exit, too, at some point.
I agree with you, and I think that question about what the recommendations are, you know, I think they're at the state and local level, I think we'll get more feedback about the efficacy of the vaccination and how many people we get. If we start to reach those thresholds, absolutely, we'd be happy to start having that conversation.
And start planning, at least.
About, easier to get out than to start, right? So.
I think there are recommendations about the percentage of a population when they think that, there's going to be the potential for herd immunity, and we have had so many people in Petersburg already vaccinated, so it'd be interesting to, I don't know anything about it, but it'd be interesting to read and figure out what those thresholds are, because it's entirely possible that in the next few weeks, Petersburg will be close to that in terms of number of people vaccinated.
Mm-hmm. Which would be awesome.
Yeah.
It is awesome. Heather, did you have a question?
Yeah, I was just going to say that Dave Berg has said after March 5th, 40% of our population will have been vaccinated.
Mm-hmm. Adult population.
Adult.
Not youth. They're not counting any of the youth.
18 and up. Mm-hmm. And we have had a few students who are 18.
The goal is 70%. I think that's the community's goal, I'm thinking.
I think it's 70 to 75. That's what I've heard too.
Yeah, for the adult population.
Well, or that.
So what is that for our total population?
Oh, good question.
Well, and that's a good question. I don't know if that means 18 and up, like 40% of the 18 and up. That's what I'm not sure of that.
Us, obviously, it probably needs to matter for the whole population of Petersburg.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And those are the conversations that we have every week during echo sessions and such with Dr. Olson. You know, those are the questions we all keep asking to the school district people. Are like, what does this mean? What does that look like, you know, within the school setting and within the community? So, we're moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
That's what
and
it feels
like. And to be honest,
like.
I mean, I know we're only into, week? It's the 9th of February.
Mm-hmm.
School's out at the end of May, so then we look at it again in March and see what the numbers are.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, there is the travel policy that maybe even becomes moot because nobody's traveling till the end of school after spring break, in theory. You know, it's like, and then it becomes reverts to the original, you know, by September again, maybe, because we've reached that threshold. So it is hard to say, this is only going to live potentially for another two months.
And I don't know what the state's doing either, because that's still in place. So,
mm-hmm.
I don't know what that will look like. But it is easier to back out than to start. So exiting will be a better plan. Exiting is easier than entering.
Well, then I think, we just keep it on the agenda. The next month could look very different.
Mm-hmm.
By then we'll have had, you said, that second group, myself included, second vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
I think our magic date is actually March 20th for a full, 48 days after your first shot or something like that? I don't remember.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So, yeah.
Well, and remember that your protocol is less restrictive than the borough's mandate. The borough's for state and local is 5 days, but you guys have a 72-hour exemption.
That's
so,
true.
Do keep that in mind. If that protocol were to be removed and we would revert back to the borough's protocol, it would be more restrictive.
Yep. That is
so you got a trip, make it less than 72 hours. Then you don't have to worry about it. You
still have to
worry about it.
Yeah. Have to get tested when you come into the airport.
Yeah.
Any other discussion? Okay, we'll keep it on the agenda for next month to revisit it again. We'll move on to 16 new business. 16.1 is more informational, but it's our special education preschool for the next school year. Superintendent Clint Painter will give an overview of the plans for the special education preschool program that will begin in fall of 2021. Okay. Take it away.
And Ms. Kahn will jump in with me here, too, since this is our brainchild, I guess, if you call it that. So if we remember back to almost a year ago or a little over a year ago when we we're having the conversations and presentations and discussions about the READS Act and early childhood education and what that all might look like and what it all could mean. And so we were having some pretty intense conversations, you know, here at this level and then certainly with other, with the local preschools and early childhood centers and some good conversations, good planning sessions, all those kinds of things were happening. And then, you know, sort of the world, you know, stopped. And yeah, the world stopped February, March. So things, of course, have resumed. Those conversations have resumed, as Heather was talking about the READS Act, and it's still moving forward in the legislature right now. I have no idea what it's going to look like. We've had a couple of legislative sessions with Senator Begich and his aide and, you know, different people that are sponsoring and kind of reshaping the legislation. So I don't know where it will end up. I mean, as we've discussed, clearly the goal of all of our system should be kids being able to read. That's not new. I mean, kids being able to read proficiently by third grade, we know the research is solid. It's there. You know, I don't think anybody's arguing with the goal at all of that. So within that, the conversation also was about the early childhood education component and the preschool and how that could work. Talking about, as Heather's mentioned a couple of times, just giving some sort of a perspective and context to the special ed needs in our community and the growing need and growing need of younger children and the supports there, and also just making the transition even from infant learning. Meg's been involved with that and preschool and early childhood realm. We know the value of it. So currently we have our Ms. Marifer and our preschool early childhood special education teacher. You know, she's working with all the different preschools in our community, the Head Start and the Children's Center. I mean, it's a wide breadth for one person to manage. And as needs increase and expand, it's becoming pretty unmanageable and not as efficient as it really should be. And so that's kind of driving this conversation about, you know, the preschool aspect and the special education component. So Heather, feel free to jump in here. I don't want to say the wrong thing, but we've talked about looking at the integrated type of a model that Juno has and other districts do this, because we're fortunate here. We have quality programs in our community. There are places that don't, and so, I mean, don't have access. So we're really lucky. We're not starting from, you know, from nothing in the community. We have a lot of really good resources and good programs. So looking at the special ed component and then so being able to offer those services in a quality area for 3 to 5 year olds, and then that's where the children would come. They would come to us and we would have the program there, and of course that would be it's a free program through our school, and then we would have an application process for same age peers, 4 year old and 4 to 5, that parents could apply. And so we would have to figure out what that number might look like, and then we would have same age peers that could access the same program within our school, and there would be there would still be a cost to it for the children who are the same age peers, so we're not in direct competition with other preschools that are operating within the community as well. So this is kind of the pilot year of moving forward with this. We do have flexibility within it to look at the numbers and make the program look like what we, you know, want it to be. But it really is primarily focused on being able to offer those services to our 3 to 5 year olds in a setting that's not wearing somebody out from running to five different places and trying to, and the connection to infant learning. So really kind of six transition hats, which is sort of unmanageable. So Heather, any other things to add?
I just have to say on top of those six transition hats, she also is in charge of all of kindergarten special education, first grade special education. So she's in the building, but yet she's all over at different locations. We are developing the enrollment process and looking at dates and times, leaning more towards a 4-day week for preschool. We're, you know, everything is taken into consideration, like how much do we pay for a half day, how much do we pay for a full day. So looking at the times and busing looking at the times and the busing, trying to figure all those out. We are leaning a little bit more towards 4-year-olds coming into the program for the integrated piece, but the 3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds for special education, of course, those students will be in the program itself. And what those requirements are for speech-only kids, articulation-only kids, and just where those lines fall, I guess. So I think that is it. There will be a cap, and more information is coming out. But as Barb is having her special education, her IEP meetings, she is discussing with families that this is an option that will be there next year.
Yeah.
So what will, I have a question. What will happen if you have your slots and some families choose to not enroll but are still eligible for special?
The special needs children will, that's where the services will be. And
okay,
that's,
so they
yeah.
will need to come to the
yeah.
school district.
And that's what most communities do because you aren't trying to spread so thinly, you know, to
and
all.
Do we have more students than spots at the current anticipated,
nope.
assuming mm-hmm. all of them actually chose to come?
Mm-hmm. Not at this time.
Okay.
We're feeling good about it. We're feeling good about it. So, and we are excited about it. I mean, it's nice to just finally take the plunge, and we're just going to see where it goes and how it can work, and continue to work, have the continued collaborative relationship that we do with our preschools and our Head Start here in the community, which is a positive working relationship, and we want to continue that too, and infant learning.
The quality of intervention, Barb does an amazing job already. But the quality of interventions when she gets that full picture of that child will be really helpful.
Yeah.
Because when she pops into our program,
yeah,
you know, it's a little snapshot, and then the rest is us reporting to her what we've noticed or observed, and so having direct contact with those kids will be just immensely beneficial for them.
I think so too. And she's so experienced. She's excited. Calling it what, Miss Frizzle's preschool?
I think for people who might be listening and wondering, you kind of touched on this, but this model is used across the state and has been for a really long time. So it's a real benefit to young kids. The early intervention is so, so important. But we utilize this program in Mat-Su. We left Petersburg for the purpose.
That's right.
Of utilizing a program because the early intervention specialist said it's now or never. And the benefit of a program like that, though, is that you can address these needs for 3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds, and many of them can then enter kindergarten or first grade without an IEP anymore.
Right.
And that's ultimately, you know, the goal is that kids can be learning right along with their peers. So. It's really good, and the fact that Barb has been doing that by, like, herself physically, like, I've seen her do this. Like, she's walking, and she's driving, and she's going around town to meet these needs for kids, but for them to have their whole, whatever power, I don't know how many hours it will be, but whatever, their whole preschool experience with a certified teacher specializing in special ed, it's like amazing for those kiddos.
Yeah. Excited about that.
Yeah.
Very lucky.
So the elephant in the room of how do you pay for it out of our existing budget? Is it federal dollars that are contributing to that? How does
so
that
that's the clincher with the READS Act. So I mean, with the funding component. So that's what they don't have determined yet. They have not determined how on the table is to be able to have a 0.5 FTE per preschool child. But our preschool students who do qualify for special education services, if they're intensive students, they do qualify for funding through the state already. So that's why we're kind of really focusing there and starting there too, and then we'll see where it'll you know, expand. So yeah, if we have children that do have significant cognitive or developmental delays and they qualify for intensive services, that does that is a separate funding source. Yeah. And then so in the future, there will be potentially regular sort of 0.5 FTE funding per child.
Okay, for traditional
same age peers
whatever.
Or exactly. So go ahead.
There's also a grant that runs every 3 years through the Department of Education, and we just missed that grant cycle, but we knew we were missing it. Thinking that the Alaska Reads Act was coming in and looking at that, they were going to do away with that grant cycle, but they didn't, and they just renewed it for 3 years because it did not pass last legislation.
Right. And so I think in talking with, because we had a meeting with the gal from DEED in the early learning, Kristen, and she, and that's what we keep getting to when we ask those questions when we're in the sessions, like with Senator Begich or with other people that are sponsoring the bill. And so they're in this kind of mishmash time right now, like waiting for this bill, but not quite there. But we're, but we still have this grant, but we don't know if the grant's going to go. And they weren't sure last spring. And we were, we had meetings all spring, even during the closure with Kristen and staff trying to, you know, well, should we apply for this? Do we even know what could happen? You know, it just kind of, and they didn't really know either. They couldn't really give us an answer because it was kind of up in the air for them too. So, yeah. And we, the way I would look at this too is we knew, we already knew we needed another special education teacher in the elementary school. We had made that determination really 3 years ago, but for sure, even last year, and we did, and we actually advertised for one, and we didn't end up, it didn't work the way it needed to work. And then really, quite frankly, it became, at this point, we didn't, we had so many unknowns going into the year that really between Heather, Barb, and Bridget, and Heidi, they were just like, we're going to just keep wrapping our minds around this and just do it. Rather than trying to bring in potentially somebody new, and we didn't have the highest quality applicants that we wanted, so we didn't just want to fill it either. So, yeah.
I guess just to maybe add on, I don't know if you guys know this, but for some students this year, Bridget and I have been the special education teacher for them.
Teacher of record.
We take some of that load off of them.
Yeah. So we knew this was, we knew we needed that teacher regardless. We needed another special ed teacher. So, so anyway.
When Barb transitions into the pre-K part, is she still going to keep the ones and twos on her caseload or no?
No.
It will just be pre-K now.
There's some conversation about pre-K and possibly helping with the transition to K. Okay. So we don't have that totally worked out. It'll depend somewhat on numbers too.
And our other special ed position is now posted.
It's posted. Yep.
Both of them.
Yes, exactly. Middle school and elementary. Yeah. So it's exciting.
Okay. It's exciting. Any other questions or comments? Okay, we'll move on next to 16.2, which is the 2021-22 school calendar. The district and board have made significant outreach to the staff, community, and students. More so than any previous year, taking all aspects into consideration, the administration will be presenting the following calendar. I'll make a motion to approve the school year calendar 21-22 as presented, once we hear it. could I have a second?
Seconded.
Okay, motion made and seconded by Jay. So now we can have the presentation and then we can have a discussion afterwards.
Okay. So this was the calendar that we did bring forward after, and as you said, you guys had requested that we wanted, that you were interested in seeking some feedback from parents and from kids as well, and we did do that. Mostly for parents was talking more about, really about spring break. We had some options and some discussion about sort of the traditional break and then potentially spreading things out and maybe offering a couple of smaller 4 or 5 day, you know, kind of weekends. And that had come up when we had talked about this a little bit in December, and so we wanted to see what people's thoughts were about it. Our staff feedback that we received was roughly 50-50. We have gotten a few more in as far as people that were interested in looking at that with this kind of two shorter options in the spring versus the traditional community. It was interesting, the feedback that parents had was a lot, there was a lot of conversation kind of about the 4 day week or the shortened days. Some people felt really strongly about spring break. Traditionally, it did win, if you want to call the percentage, it was high. But like 77% of people were interested in that. But sometimes we know that's how it is, right? Because it's what we're comfortable with. It's what we know and, you know, all those things. And we had that conversation here too. And I think Jay even brought that up and said, you know, it's just the time to be talking about different, you know, something sort of different or people willing to kind of go there, mm-hmm. That sort of thing. So really good feedback from people though. And I do think that there's interest and will questions about things. Like if we do an early Friday, what does that look like? Are there options for families in the afternoons? Will there be more conversation about 4 day weeks in the future? You know, there's question about that. And that came from parents too. So, I mean, concerns, but also just like interest in it. So I think that it's always good to get feedback and get comments from people about that. Calendars are notoriously challenging. Trying to look at student needs, staff needs, community needs, trying to balance instructional time and collaboration time, trimesters, quarters, and semesters, and high school activities, and elementary, I mean, anyway. So here is the calendar. This is what we are bringing forward to you. We feel that this is what has been spoken to the most at this point. And I do think that we are in a pretty pretty tense environment in our world in general. And I think that I don't know that we have enough will right now to do something drastically different in the coming year due to some of these unknowns and that sort of thing. So this is what we're bringing forward. The spring break dates are where they are, starting roughly around the end of August, ending days after Memorial Day, and 2 weeks at Christmas, and we've interspersed in-service days around Martin Luther King, President's Day, and then also to try to coincide somewhat with the semesters for high school. It's been a request, and having some in-service days interspersed to review MAP data, which has been a bigger focus for us, and also looking at our school climate connectedness surveys, which is important to actually, if we give those kinds of surveys and have that data, we need to look at it and use it for planning purposes within the school. So that's the sort of general sense of the calendar. It was interesting because there were a lot of questions and comments that have come up about travel and spring break, and you know, some people have said, well, you know, we can't go, we can only go in April, we can only go here, we can go, you know, all those things. So we'll never make everybody happy. So you have to go into it knowing that that's not going to happen. But what's interesting is we wanted to provide some information to you guys, too, about the amount of travel. Because there is a lot of travel that happens, and a lot of travel. And it is disruptive. We understand the need. We get it. And we know, especially, you know, recently and all those things. But it is. I mean, it's even when kids can call in and Zoom in and do all those things, you know, it just is. It's just not exactly the same. And it's disruptive and all those things. The challenge that I think we really do have moving forward, and it's what we're dealing with right now, is honestly, it's cost. I mean, if spring break is when spring break is, and Alaska Airlines can look at everybody's calendars and know when they are, should they bring in more planes? Yes. I mean, they should. Do they? No. So you know, the cost is the cost. So that's what we get a lot too. Like people will say, well, we can only go in January. We can't afford it. We're going to go, you know, which on a personal level, I get it. I understand it. We totally understand it. So with that said, we wanted to give just some numbers. So Heather, do you want to give some numbers from the elementary school as far as just travel or any input on that?
Yeah.
Just for the board's information.
When I was looking at this and the first thoughts that I had going through my head were, we have this Alaska recess, it's coming through. Our kids, there is a majority, or not a majority, there is a population that are not reading by third grade. Kindergarten is, you're not required to go to school until 7. The state doesn't require as many hours for K-3 as it does for 4-12. But we all have to read by third grade. And I started going down this route thinking, holy moly, like we have a little bit of a concern to think about. And just so that you know where I'm coming from, the only time that we get as a family, like my personal family, is at 2 weeks at Christmas. It doesn't work out. Like that's just the occupations we chose in our life, and that's how the dice plays for us. So that's the only time that we ever get as a family. So I just want you guys to know that that's where I was kind of coming with this. And I do understand that people travel. If I could travel, I would love to travel. And so we were looking for, well, these families, there's a large population of people that are leaving. And a lot of these families, these kids that are traveling, and this is just for the elementary school, they are below proficient in reading, and that is a concern. It's just a concern overall. So we don't know quite how to go about this and help some people. So just some numbers that we picked up is in September, we had 7 families that traveled, and the average travel was 7 days for those 7 families. October 13, and again, this is just the elementary, with a 6-day average. November, 11 families with a 10-day average. December, 14 families with an 8-day. January, 12 families with a 10-day, almost 11-day average. February, 5 families with a 15-day average. And then March, so far we have 1 family with a 28-day average. So that, I mean, it's a big average. So my thought process as I was going through, and then we were talking over as staff, if we are really concerned about students and we really want to do what's best for students, maybe looking at a year-round school option, maybe just throwing that out there and talking about it and seeing, you know, the research there for the students and where they need to be by graduation, there's research there, and that's what said to be best. The other is use breaks as breaks. So use those breaks. Use your spring break as a spring break. Use the Christmas break as Christmas break. Like, use those breaks as breaks. Summer break. I know that we live in a weird town with a lot of fishing. So, you know, summer breaks are, you might get them, you might not. And then just allowing and understanding that time for teacher planning. It takes a lot to plan. And I know that there is a lot of feedback on Fridays and how our days are shortened. But that's for your benefit. That's for these students' benefit. That's the only person it's benefiting is these students. Because we're trying to close those gaps and we're trying to give them everything that we need to give them from the Department of Education. And we're trying to give them the resources and the tools to become these walking, living, breathing us, I guess. So if we allow the teachers to have that planning time, they can have that planning time to do an adequate lesson, a Cadillac lesson. But if we don't, then it's just going to be the bare minimum. And so that's where we were just kind of coming at it. So.
I'd be curious to see what the vacation, like your the math for a different year, because I thought, what is it possible that some, is it more this year or less, but more, I would assume it would be less because
people might not be traveling as much, but then again, people put off things from March on, didn't do medical trips in the summertime that they normally would have done. And then it got to the point of like, we have to get this done. Or they got called because get down here now. We've got, we're open, you know, because the reality that a lot of us will go to Seattle, the Seattle area. So I was just kind of curious what a different year.
They're not.
Oh, they're not medical. These are all vacations.
These are vacations.
Okay, I think that needed to be clear.
Days missed from school, so like when I was travel 7, that was a kid that missed a week and 2 days basically of school. Yeah.
Wow.
And that factors in their like quarantine time as well, where they're physically not at school.
And looking back, we did pull a couple years just looking at 17, 18, and 18, 19. And these are global numbers. And these may include some that are combined medical and beyond. So
okay.
2017, 18 in the elementary, again, larger number. 84 families took 5 or more consecutive days in a row of absences. And in 18, 19, 79 families took 5 or more consecutive absences, and of those, 53 had 6 or more day absence. So, just for comparison, as you had mentioned. And people do that. I mean, people will have to go to Seattle or something for a medical thing, and, you know, they're like, we have to go down for 2 or 3 days or whatever, and they'll, you know, they'll extend it by, you know, another. And we understand those things, too.
No, I just
too.
Think this data is kind of
you
interesting.
You know, it's just interesting. When we started really looking at it and talking about it, it was like, well, it's just information for people. I think it's important. So, anyway, Rick, did you have any more on middle and high school? Or?
Yeah, ours, not quite as extensive, but for the high school, in September, we had 2 trips, which is an average number of days of 2.5. But then we jump up when we get here through the fall, winter, October, 16 trips in the high school. Again, these are also non-medical. These are not medical. 16 trips with an average of 6.4 days missed. This is school days missed. November had 11 trips of 6.6 days missed. December, 16 trips of 4.6 days missed. That doesn't include vacation days in there. January, 5 trips of 10.4 days on average gone. And then February, 5 trips with 4 days on average. The middle school, September, we had 3 trips of a 9-day average. October, we had 4 trips of 4.5-day average. November, 3 trips of a 12.3-day average. December, 3 trips of 4.7-day average. January, 6 trips of a 7-day average. In February, what we knew as of last week, 2 trips with an 8.5-day average. And one of the monumental facts there, of course, was the high school, when you're missing days there, especially on the block classes. A lot of content.
Can I ask a question for that?
Of course.
Yeah, with those days, so if they were absent and they still came in, was that included?
Like for limit to half day or something?
They were virtually present during that time.
I don't think we counted virtual presence being absent because they were still attending.
I was just going to make the same comment. So those are kids that are truly gone from school, not participating in class in any way, shape, or form, which is interesting because as a parent of 3 secondary kids, you know, like, oh, you have a sniffle? Well, lucky you. You can log in, you know?
Yeah, right.
I mean, obviously, your trips are trips, so people aren't necessarily doing that, but a lot of this school for hard work.
All before spring break even has happened.
We certainly respect what someone says, you know, when we're going to Florida, we've got to get a break, we fish all summer. We get that. You don't want to go to Florida and sit on the beach and log in. I totally understand that, but a lot of days.
I was kind of surprised at the number of comments regarding like travel during spring break because I mean, in my personal circle, like nobody I know ever traveled then because it's expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And you're kind of like, we're sailing in the summer and that our eyes are set on that prize of
June, July, or August.
Right, of going on vacation. And so I thought there would be more support. And I personally like the idea of the 2 5-day breaks to do local things like we had talked, like you would.
Mm-hmm.
Hope for this year,
right.
I thought that was a good idea for next year and beyond. So I'm surprised at how many comments there were about, what about our vacation? And because it doesn't seem
with the numbers, it doesn't seem like that's actually a high vacation time.
Right. That's what we've been, that's what we've seen more over the last, I would say, just anecdotally even, but then really looking at the numbers, I would say to five, the last 5 to 8 years, really,
yeah.
You know.
Because people take vacation when the weather's rotten, and in March, you're kind of like getting hopeful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would be curious. I mean, I know when you say seven families, you're accounting for one family unit having gone, not numbers of children gone.
Right, one family.
So
yeah.
How many families do we have in the school district then? Total.
Yeah, I didn't do that math.
I know. I wasn't expecting it. That's a question just out of curiosity.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we're not going to answer, but it's like, well, it's seven families out of 50, 75, 100. You know, what? I guess I'm just kind of curious. That's more curiosity than anything, because I thought, well, you can say seven or 14 families, but if you've got 200 families or 300 families or whatever, you know, maybe that you're still looking at a small percentage of your student population actually gone. Are we looking at a large percentage of our population
gone? That's a good question. I think the other thing too to just consider though
mm-hmm.
is that there's also that impact on the classroom
yes.
environment.
No,
itself.
I'm not.
You know what I mean?
I don't want to
yeah.
minimize that.
Absolutely.
I'm just kind of curious.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, just that kind of the in and out, and okay, this one's gone for this week. This one's gone for this week. This one's gone for the. You know, like
yeah.
that part is tricky.
As to the teachers' workload too, and
that's what I mean. Yeah, it makes that challenging.
You know.
Yeah.
Well,
mm-hmm.
the older data that you pulled,
mm-hmm.
you have like 88 something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if that was 88 students and not families, that's still a huge percentage of the
420 of them.
Of
yeah,
the elementary. Oh, was that, I was thinking elementary for some.
That K through.
No, so those numbers, the like 2018-19 was that 79 families taking five or more consecutive days. That's just, but that's over a year. That's not broken down
that's
by
right,
month.
Right.
But
oh, okay.
It's a lot of.
And that's just elementary.
It's a normal thing for our family to miss this chunk of school for vacation.
Right.
It's not necessarily in March.
Right.
Yeah.
Our numbers won't show, though. I mean, those numbers won't show how many families actually took spring break off and actually came to school or Christmas break gone and didn't miss any school. So those numbers would probably increase.
Yeah.
Then those families don't have that week long to plan. You know, I mean, if they're planning on gone, being gone spring break, you guys would never know if spring break came back. Does that make sense?
Right. Yes, I see what you're saying.
Because there might
yeah.
have been 20 families gone on spring break, but we
right.
don't know that because
mm-hmm.
they didn't miss any school.
Right.
We just thought it was interesting.
Yeah.
You know, but you're right. Yes. And we could probably find that out too, actually. We could probably poll people, actually. I mean, we do know a lot of times because sometimes people will leave like on a Wednesday or Thursday or something before a vacation, and you know, it would be interesting to know how many people, you know, actually do
reserve
try to leave, yeah, during that. So, anyway,
with this calendar, what do our school hours look like? Has that part been done?
We are still working on the hours. We are talking about Fridays. I know one of the big concerns on the Fridays, especially with younger grade levels, is always the you know. The after school care and the activities there, and we have some ideas about that too, being able to get whether
that
it's after school
something that will be discussed on Monday during you're in that meeting, right? I know we're going to talk about the early childhood fair and preschool, but is that something that could be discussed while we're all in the same room?
Because yeah. we just don't have anything solid right yet. What we're trying to
yeah.
Is that okay? Mm-hmm. What we're trying to do for elementary school is figure out the Alaska Reads Act reads very specifically that the intervention time that we find for these students for reading has to be outside mm-hmm. the regular day. So not only do we teach for this long, but now we are adding something outside. So do we add that outside in the morning? Do we add that outside to the afternoon? Do we add that outside right into the middle of the day and try to account for this? I mean, all kinds of things that coming in, starting school later, coming in earlier, maybe getting that intervention time before then or taking the intervention time afterwards. But then at the same time, which is kind of why we thought, well, the four-day week won't work for us because we would have kids there until 3:30, 3:45. They're going to be spent by the end of the day. There's not going to be any learning. So morning, yes, morning's better. If we do anything in the middle of the day, how do we organize it K-5 to get it in
So those are just kind of all coming from us. So we talked about it, but we haven't really made any decisions on that. It also plays into how many teachers will we have? What does our enrollment look like? Just those types of questions that we can't really answer yet.
What we would say is that we know that's a big priority. The Fridays are challenging with, we're definitely leaning toward, providing that third bus like we've done this year. We don't know exactly what time that would be, but that's something we would probably continue. We do know that especially the secondary world was having a lot of success with some additional support with kids after that noon time, and some kids were accessing that bus as well. They'd walk over and grab it. So that would be something that we're, still considering doing. And then just being able to have the kids stay till whether it's that sort of that 1 o'clock magic hour, or whatever on that Friday with our after school activities and lunch on that Friday. So I think we have some ways to work and help families with some of those kind of questions and concerns that are out there, continuing to partner with other local groups, whether it's dance and swim team. I mean, all those things, we did show we could do that this year. It's always those things that have kind of come out, the collaborations that did come out with the things that we were able to do, whether it was working with swim team or all that, how can we make this happen? How can we help support our kids so that they're in quality places where they need to be and cared for? And
I miss that though about the Reads Act, that it has to be outside of the normal classroom period.
Well, interventions are defined as that. Yes. I mean, it's okay. Like, so you're supposed to have your sort of, your regular reading instruction.
Mm-hmm.
And then, if a child is significantly behind,
mm-hmm.
you have to dose them with more specific instruction. They need more instruction. They need more intervention support.
So an intervention theoretically could be done like on a Friday afternoon?
It could be, or maybe there's something that we adjust or modify or flex where, maybe it's at 8 to 8:30 in the morning and we have some different scenarios with different kids, and kids flow in and out of those groups too. Like, the hope is that they're not necessarily in an intervention group all year long. They may, they talk about doing things more in that 8 to 12 week, kind of mode too. And if you can have that really targeted instruction, you can make a lot of growth, with kids.
So different than even pull out for reading that we do now or
yeah.
in a normal school year?
Yes.
Because sometimes those are replacement lessons. That's
yeah.
not necessarily, it
oh, okay.
may be done during the same time. So
okay.
it's looking at it as an in addition too. So how do you kind of craft that time?
Okay.
For.
So you have to teach your regular curriculum, but these kids need something in addition to that.
To help bridge
so
the gap.
Where do you find that? Do you pull from math to go to reading, or reading to go to math, or science and social studies to go to reading? Or
That's a whole nother discussion about pull out for math.
I know.
I'm going to pull my hair out.
But what we would say is that intervention actually is intervention. So it's not just reading. And that's what I mean. We are focusing on needing to, the Reads Act is the Reads Act, and
right.
we know the research behind kids need, impacts everything else.
Right. And I think as the community, as we move into those discussions about what the school day may look like for an elementary school, is being reminded that we are required to do those things. So it may not be what they want as a school day, but it's what we are required to give and to produce. So,
and trying to find the time.
Right.
Yeah. And just thinking, we originally thought, yes, Fridays, that would be a beautiful intervention. We could, but that's one day a week.
Yeah.
We need to hit some of this
multiple
5
times.
Days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And as you go up and you're doing these progress, your progress monitoring students, you have to increase the intensity of your intervention. So there's just certain steps, and you have this RTI plan that's attached to this IEP, and you have to show this gap analysis, but you also have to show the interventions that you took to get to this IEP plan. And not only how many days a week, but what's the time, what's the frequency, the duration, it's just the whole.
And all of that would fall under our reading specialist, right? Not the classroom, not necessarily the classroom teacher.
It doesn't. Maybe. It doesn't have to fall under the reading specialist. I don't know how that one reading specialist.
But isn't there funding attached to the RESEC too?
Not necessarily for that.
So that one reading specialist can't see all of our students.
That's what I was going to say. Are we getting more of them then? Because there's no way there's enough time in the day.
Yeah.
That's why we would look at the schedule and flex those hours within that day. And we're still working out those details. So yeah.
Okay. Let's move back to the calendar.
Yep.
Sorry. I know it was a fun tangent, but we do need to get back on the onto the calendar. which I know is part of affecting that, but let's okay. Do we have any more comments, questions?
I have two calendar comments. Okay. One, selfishly, as you are all doing your planning, from a parent perspective, it is hard to have kids that are elementary versus secondary with different schedules. I mean, I get a 15, 20, even a 30-minute difference is no problem. Mm-hmm. But the 2 hours difference on Friday is... very inconvenient when you live out the road, but something to consider. Obviously, during COVID, we're all doing what we got to do. But for subsequent years, I hope we would go back to something more traditional, whether it's short or not short, or but short more in the same.
Consistent, maybe.
Consistently, whatever it is, yes.
Okay.
But my other feedback is you basically presented us a very traditional schedule, and I guess I just wanted to point out, you know, we had talked about some different ideas. You guys talked about ideas. And the last time I was on the board, I remember sitting right up there with the exact same discussion about 4 days, about, you know, what spring break looked like. And that was, how many years ago was that? I don't know, 5 years ago or something.
Yeah.
It was the identical conversation minus COVID. But, and we didn't have all these nifty survey tools then.
Yeah.
But I guess I just wanted to make a point to say these are normal discussions, and the fact that we can get these cool surveys out to families and really give them an opportunity to provide feedback. I heard a little frustration from people, like, why in the world are you asking these questions? And I think it's really important that we're asking questions, that we're constantly, like, having an open dialogue, that families get the opportunity to, you know, provide structured feedback, and I would have loved to see a change, but at the same time, I love that we can say, wow, all these parents feel this way, let's do what works for them, you know, so I guess I wanted to acknowledge the process, and it's great that families provided the feedback. I'm a little bummed so many people felt frustrated, but, you know, this is all good conversation, and to know that we're part of a district where there's like constant creative and outside the box thinking, I think is really good. Ultimately, you know, families spoke. We're moving forward with something more traditional. Look, seems like, I mean, I think we haven't voted yet. But, it's good.
Yeah.
We can all say, wow, you know, look at that. That process worked. So thank you for doing that, for your hard work, even though it didn't go the way I would have liked, but maybe it will. I don't know.
I think to piggyback on what Meg said real quick, too, about getting feedback, like ranting on the Facebook doesn't get your point across. Like, these surveys are a great way to express your opinion. All of our emails are also on the website.
Yeah.
And we read them. We might not respond the day of or immediately, but we definitely do take the time to read them, or phone calls or text messages, whatever. But the Facebook is not the avenue. And, yeah. Especially with this calendar stuff, that's where I saw a lot of, well, and COVID, you know, the Smart Start plan. Everything was like out there in Facebook land, and it's like, oh, let me check my email and see what people are saying. Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I got some stuff about the calendar, but a lot of it was on the Facebook. And it's like, if you have the time to get on there and do that, you have the time to email us in the appropriate way where we can really understand and actually have like a dialogue or a conversation. Whatever is happening in school district plans.
I guess just in the future, something to consider when we're a fishing community. It seems like the same season starting to run the end of August versus September, and a lot of the high school kids are needing to keep fishing, so they end up missing a week or 2 weeks of that first part of school.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be something. I mean, it's probably too late for this one, but to consider in the future is to recognize how many kids we're missing in that first week or two because they need to fish. It seems like the same season keeps getting a little bit later.
I think Rick's got some numbers there, too. Some numbers.
Kids left. Trying to remember. It actually wasn't quite as high. I think it was about 5 to 8 over the last couple of years. Kids missed that time. And actually, we did an earlier draft. Remember, it's actually starting a week later, but we love talking about it. I mean,
a week earlier.
Tends to be sunnier in September, too.
Yeah.
What's that?
Tends to be sunnier in September sometimes, too. And we're back in school and it's sunny out.
In the old days, we started after Labor Day, remember?
Yeah.
It's been a while.
In the
old days. Yeah. Or year round. Okay. Motion. Any more discussion? Otherwise, I'll call for the vote. Okay. Motion's been made and seconded to approve the calendar as presented. Mara, please call the roll.
Kim Lee Lister?
Yes.
Meg Lister?
Yes.
Katie Holmgren?
Yes.
Sarah Holmgren?
Yes.
Cheryl File?
Yes.
Jay Lister?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0. Start planning your vacations during spring break. Okay. All right, 16.3 for the fiscal year 2022. Oh my goodness. Superintendent Clint Painter will present a list of tenured teachers being offered a contract for the following school year. I will make a motion to approve the fiscal year 2022 tenured teacher contract list as presented that was in our board packet. Can I have a second?
I'll second.
Motion has been made and seconded by Meg. Go ahead. Superintendent Clint Painter.
Okay, and I think just the list that was attached there are 33 tenured teachers in our district, and that's the list that you have received, and there are three newly tenured teachers that
yeah,
will be achieving that tenure. Mr. Petruski in the middle school, also our Spanish teacher, and Ms. Turner, our counselor, and Ms. Vanderbest, who is teaching fourth grade this year in the elementary. So there's our list, and we are happy to be able to offer contracts to them tomorrow. We're moving forward with that, and then hoping to have our non-tenured contracts in March. And yeah.
Okay. Motion's been made and seconded. Any other discussion? Oh, I'm hearing none. Mara, please call the roll.
Kinley Lister.
Yeah.
Sarah Holmgren?
Yes.
Jay Lister?
Yes.
Cheryl File?
Yes.
Katie Holmgren?
Yes.
Meg Lister?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0. Next we have the board will recess to executive session to discuss subjects that tend to prejudice the reputation and character of a person, provided the person may request a public discussion, more specifically Principal Kahn and Principal Dormer's contract. I'll make a motion to recess to that executive session to discuss the principal contracts. Could I have a second?
I'll second.
Motion's been made and seconded. I don't think we vote to go to executive session. You just recess to it. So
that's right.
Okay. So we will recess.